Sai Ram, dear listeners, welcome to another fresh episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai. And let us begin, as always, by offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Radio Sai Answering Booth is a program where we invite questions on practical spirituality from you listeners, and I and you together look for answers in Swami's message. So it is certainly fitting to begin with the prayer, "Dearest Swami, give us the understanding that the questions that arise in us are as much inspired by you as much as the answers we find. And so let us not ignore such questions that arise in our minds, dear listeners. For as I always say, the question is the first spark that turns us towards bringing Swami's message into our lives. I'm not saying whenever that question comes, ask it on this show, that is never going to be your answer. Because even if I'm going to give you the answer on this show, that will never be your answer. After you listen to the answer and churn it in your own mind through what Swami calls the process of mananam, you will get your answer from within. That alone is the answer, your answer. Everything else you get from outside is at best only a pointer. Well, what I said is little more than an introduction, for that is also a pointer to the quote of the day. Yes, we do have a beautiful question on today's show as always, the answer to which is most likely going to take all the time on the show. But in the end, I will share a little something that happened when we were students. A very small incident, but a very powerful lesson nonetheless. But before that, the quote for the week. And the quote is from a man who was once described by the Western media with epithets such as cyclonic Hindu, warrior prophet, and militant mystic. No points for guessing, it is indeed Swami Vivekananda. I quote, "You have to grow from inside out. None can teach you, none can make you spiritual. There is no other teacher but your own soul." End of quote. Well, isn't that what I just mentioned in my introduction? No learning of spiritual value can ever come from the outside. What's outside are only conditions, raw materials, and at best a suitable environment. But the real process always happens because of what is within. Take, for example, the growth of a seed. We take the seed, put it in the soil, not too deep, not too shallow, pour water, it then sprouts. It comes above the surface. We ensure it gets good sunlight and air. All of this provides the right conditions for the seed to grow into a tree. But that knowledge to transform that tiny little seed into a massive tree is only inside the seed. It does not come from the outside. With just soil, water, sunlight and air, we cannot achieve anything. Same is the case with each of us and our spiritual transformation. You can listen to Radio Sai all the time, go for bhajans, read Swami's literature, attend satsangs and talks, fill your life with good, noble people. All of these are certainly necessary and important conditions and the important environment for growing in. But the growth always happens from inside because that knowledge, that recipe to transform us from human to divine is actually within. And sooner we recognize this and turn within, the faster we will make progress. That is why Swami would keep reminding us, the true guru is within. The true guidance can come only from the inner voice. The conscience is the master we must follow. The conditions outside are certainly important, as I said, but it cannot help us all the way. And that is the danger in spiritual path. Sometimes we fill our life with practices, rituals, pilgrimages, and even noble company, but the transformation doesn't happen. Sometimes it is baffling. We even see people spending years and years in the physical proximity of Swami and wonder how they are doing something that is wrong or unacceptable. That's because even being close to the avatar is only an external factor. If that external blessing does not affect the change from within, even that, however great an opportunity it is, can be frittered away. So before we move on, permit me, dear listeners, to read the quote of Swami Vivekananda one more time for you. I quote, "You have to grow from the inside out. None can teach you. None can make you spiritual. There is no other teacher but your own soul. Time now to head to the question of this week. In this week too, we have a question from a little one. It's from a teenager from Sharjah. Her name is Vidya. And she's been kind enough to send us her question in her own voice. Dear listeners, the question does seem like a simple one. But believe me, this is a very, very profound question. Because the answer to this question is something which is going to be more important for all of us than just a student who's trying to get good marks. So first, let's listen to the question in the voice of Vidya, a teenager from Sharjah. She's, I think, 14 years old. We'll first listen to her question.
Sai Ram, my question is, I sometimes feel for my mistakes and think I should do it the correct way and change. But when it comes to practice, I simply cannot do it. What is the reason for this and how can I improve? Thank you.
Well, that sounds like a very simple question, but the question that she asked, just to rephrase it, is sometimes we make up our mind to do some things. We wish to do some things. We wish to behave in a certain manner. We wish to lead our life in a certain manner. But we eventually don't do that. Why is it that we make up our mind, but we are not able to follow it? From the point of view of a student's life, there are many things like this, you know, from waking up in the morning to sticking to a schedule to having an exercise regime or whatever it is. There are many, many small things. But isn't this a problem that literally comes with us throughout our life? And just to give you the context, one of the things which Swami would say, the difference between someone like Arjuna in Mahabharata and somebody like Duryodhana is, there is this interesting episode where Krishna tries to go and counsel Duryodhana. All that he is telling Arjuna and the Pandavas during the war and before the war about what is dharma and what needs to be done. Apparently Krishna tries to counsel that to Duryodhana, because definitely the one who is doing the mistake is Duryodhana, and you need to give this important piece of counsel to him, right? So when Duryodhana is given this advice, he apparently cuts Arjuna short and he says, you know, don't give me all these advice, don't give me all these moral advice. And Duryodhana says, I know exactly what is right and what is wrong. I know what I'm doing is wrong. I know what is dharma, what is adharma. But he said, but I cannot follow what is dharma. I am not inclined towards following what is right. I am more inclined towards following what is wrong. So this was Duryodhana's answer. But interestingly, during the course of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna raises the same point. Arjuna raises the same issue and tells Krishna, he says, why is it that when we make up our mind to follow something which is good or do something which is right, there is so much hesitation in us. We are not able to do what we want to do. So there Duryodhana said that this is it. I cannot do, and this is not in my nature to do. But here Arjuna was asking, why is it that we are stopped from doing what is good from within? What stops us and how do we overcome that? So here Arjuna wanted to know the means of overcoming that weakness. And just like that, Vidya, you have asked us a question of, you know, sometimes I wish to do some things, but I'm not able to follow it. It seems very simple, and in your life, definitely, it must be involving very simple things. But this problem is something which literally lives with us through our ages and manifests in different ways as we grow up. So for that reason, the answer which I'm going to give for you may be a bit complex, because I'm going to try to be as comprehensive as I can, because this is literally the crux of what Swami wants us to follow when we say following Swami's message in day-to-day life. This question brings out the crux of that Swami's message. So I would like to spend some time and explain that. It may be a little complex for you to understand, but I believe that you can understand still. I know that you are an SSC student, so you should be able to follow what I'm saying. But even otherwise, don't be too worried about it. Just listen to the explanation. At the end of it, I'll try to summarize what you can practically follow. You know, you just don't have to worry about the explanation which I start with. Just those last few tips you can just pick up, and even if you follow that, you'll realize that, you know, you will do better in following some of these resolutions that you make. So first I'll try and explain the theory behind why sometimes we are unable to follow certain resolutions or decisions that we make. And later, as I said, I will tell you what are the practical steps that you can take. So why are we not able to do what we make up our minds to do? And also, why are we not able to stop ourselves from doing certain things which we know that we should not be doing? Right? There are many, many things, small things that we indulge in which we are not supposed to do. We know we are not supposed to do it, but we still do it. There are things we know that we are supposed to do, but we are not able to get ourselves to do. The decision is there in the mind, but when it comes to practical applications, we fall short. Right? So I'll start with something probably you can relate to because you asked this question. Let's say that you wish to wake up early in the morning and study. That is something which all of us as students have always wanted to do, right? Because Swami, when we were students, Swami would always say that the early morning time is the best time to study. So we all have tried this, that we've all had this desire that we want to wake up early and study. So now you make up your mind that you want to wake up early. Probably you set an alarm that will wake you up, or you tell your mother that you want to be woken up at this particular time. But you wake up in the morning and then you feel, oh, it's all right, let me go back to sleep, right? You wanted to wake up, you even wake up, but then you're not strong enough to be awake. You go back to bed, and probably sometime later you wake up and then you feel guilty about it. Oh God, what have I done? You know, one more day I've done the same thing, right? This could be a one-off incident that one day you wanted to wake up, you couldn't do, but this could also be a recurring event, right? It might be happening over a period of time, or sometimes you start a practice, you do it for 2-3 days, and then, you know, it goes away. Then again you start it goes away, then after a few attempts, you suddenly feel guilty about it. I'm not able to do what I wanted to do, right? So you have the thought, but what is making you not express the thought in action? And that is the question. You made a conscious decision that I want to wake up in the morning, but there is something else within your mind that is overruling that decision and that is stopping you from following that decision or resolution that you've taken. That subtle aspect in us which actually decides what we eventually do, what propels us to, you know, propels every thought, word and deed in us, is what we refer to as tendencies, right? Tendencies, or it could even be called nature, our innate nature. Don't worry too much about the word. Well, I'll just try to make it as simple as it can be explained. It's just what, putting it across simply, it is just what makes us what we are. What makes Vidya a different person from me? What makes me a different person from somebody else? What makes somebody else a different person from you and me? So there is something internally about them which makes them different. And that is what we refer to as sometimes tendencies, and the Sanskrit words which we often tend to use is samskaras, vasanas. You don't have to worry about that for now. But these are these tendencies built up in us, which is very subtle inside our mind. When we make a conscious decision, it is in our conscious mind. We consciously say, I want to wake up, I want to study, I want to do this. But unconsciously in us is what we call these tendencies, which literally propel us to doing what we do, to speaking what we speak, and even leads us to think the thoughts which very spontaneously arise in our mind, right? It is not that it's something which is evil, it's not always something which is bad, but it is a sort of a preconditioning. Now, as I said, there are so many people that you see. Some people are kind, some people are rude, some people are very, very friendly, some people are very helpful by nature. Some people are, you know, like to keep to themselves. They don't speak much. Some people are very talkative. This difference from each person to person, these characteristics and qualities, comes from the tendencies within. And sometimes you would even notice this, that even though you've been brought up in the same family, you and your sister might be completely different. And, you know, your aunts may be completely different, though they come from the same background and probably live in the same place. You'd often notice this. That is because the tendencies in each one of us is completely different. So if those are the tendencies which propel us to do what we do unconsciously, spontaneously, even without our volition at sometimes, invariably, anything worthwhile that we do in life has to be done battling this nature and these tendencies that are within us. nothing of value ever happens if we simply keep doing whatever our tendencies push us to do, invariably. I mean, there might be exceptions. I probably wouldn't like to explore that option. But invariably, if we keep going according to our tendencies and these this innate nature with us, we will actually get nowhere. Anything of worth in life can be achieved only if you do a little bit of battling against these tendencies. Let me try to give you a simple example. You know, when we want to learn swimming, let's say. Now, if you take a human body and throw it into a body of water, into a pool, into a tank, into a pond or a lake, the nature of the human body is to sink, right? That is the physical nature of the body. The body will go down. So when the body sinks, it drowns the person, right? That's what happens. So this is the nature of the body. And so if we want to counter this nature of the body to sink, then you'll have to counter it with the movements of your hands and your feet, right? And it should be a constant movement. You could call it by different names. So the nature of the human body is to sink into the water and sink downwards. And if you want to stay afloat, and further if you want to even move forward, then you will have to do what we call swimming strokes or whatever it is. So you are literally doing something which is against the tendency of the body, right? And that's precisely what we do. And this happens in a very slow manner. Like, this is the case with everything. Swami would always say this, be it swimming, be it cycling, be it even walking. When we were children, we were not able to walk. We would always fall down. Even walking, speaking, and all of this comes by practice. And what we call practice is in slow installments, we resist these tendencies. These tendencies to become go in a certain manner. We resist them through small ounces of practice so that we, you know, just like in the example of swimming, you stay afloat when the nature of the body is actually to sink. So the question is, so what do we do? Now, what we do, especially when it comes to things like swimming, is we buy a swimsuit and the next day we want to swim across the English Channel. It never happens like that. It doesn't work that way. So similarly, you know, we make decisions and resolutions and we think that from the next day we can follow it. It will never happen like that. Making decisions or making resolutions are like buying a swimsuit or probably enrolling in a swimming class, right? That alone will not help. Of course, that is the first step. Making a resolution, wanting to do something, the will to do something is the first step, but that alone will never help. The act as such of making a resolution is of no value. So with slow effort, you must counter this tendency that is within us. So how do you do that? What I explained to you was that, you know, the nature of the body is to sink, so then you move your hands and feet in a certain manner that you counter this tendency to sink so that you stay afloat. But that could probably just be an erratic move of your limbs. But slowly when you learn swimming over a period of time, you slowly learn, you know, if you've learned swimming, you'll know that they'll first take you to the shallow waters, they'll teach you there, they'll get you acquainted to being in water, then slowly they'll take you to deeper waters, and eventually you learn the art of swimming. So once you've learned the art of swimming, what happens? Now they take you and let's say they push you into a swimming pool. Earlier, your tendency was to go down, but now since you know swimming, your tendency is to start swimming. So what you're effectively doing is, you are creating a new tendency, or you are replacing or modifying a tendency which was already there. So in that sense, for any practice, I make a resolution that I have to start doing this from tomorrow. That is only the first step. Then I start doing it. They say that any practice or any effort, if it has to become a habit, if it has to become a part of our tendency, you need to do it constantly at least for 21 days or 30 days. Of course, it may differ from people to people. It's not that it's standard for everybody. But at least the minimum what they say is 21 days. Which is 3 weeks to 4 weeks, right? You have to do it. And when you do that, don't think that, oh, I have to do this only for 3 weeks, then I can go back to my lazy ways. It's not that way. It takes about 3 weeks for you to get comfortable with that practice, comfortable with that routine. So anything that you take up, this is the first practical tip I'm giving you. I'll of course summarize all of them later, but the first practical tip is anything that you want to do, be it waking up in the morning or creating a study schedule for yourself or having a certain diet pattern or diet routine, all of this, try and follow it. Don't make it too rigorous. Don't make it so difficult that you cannot follow it. In pint sizes, in small installments, try to have it and follow it for at least 3 weeks to a month, 21 days to 30 days at least. The question is, now when I say this, the next question which will come is, how do I get the willpower to change my tendency, right? I've told you that there are tendencies, the tendencies drag us in a certain manner, and we have to counter these tendencies if we have to do something of value. So to counter these tendencies, what we need is what we refer to as willpower, right? So the question automatically becomes, how do I get that willpower to change my tendencies? For that, we must first understand how we actually become weak without our knowledge, right? Only if we know how we become weak, then probably we can manipulate our actions and our practices so that we can counter this process of us becoming weak. So we must first understand how we actually become weak, and this becoming weak happens without our knowledge, right? You know, we all keep saying this. I'm sure you will also agree with this, what I'm saying, that I want to do what I feel like doing. I want to sleep as long as I want. I want to study when I feel like studying. Today I feel like going out and playing, I want to play. Today I feel like doing something else, I want to do that, right? We don't realize that whenever we say this, whenever we say I want to do what I want to do, I want to do what I feel like doing, we are actually, without our knowledge, without any resistance, we are obeying our tendencies. So there are these set of tendencies in our head which propel us to do certain things, speak in a certain manner, think in a certain manner. And when we constantly keep saying that I want the freedom to do whatever I want to do, we don't realize that it's actually not freedom, it is a form of bondage. Swami would very, very often say this, that you think that to do what you feel like is a freedom, it is not freedom, it is bondage. Because you are actually following this pattern of the tendencies forcing you to do something, and you keep obeying the tendencies. When somebody asks you to do something and you keep doing that, isn't that a form of slavery? How can that be a form of freedom? So when we constantly keep saying that I want to do what I feel like doing, I want to, today I feel like eating something, I eat. Today I feel like sleeping for longer, I sleep. We don't realize we are actually making ourselves weak in the process. We are becoming slaves to our tendency, right? And as youngsters, we always resist rules in this manner, right? We feel that people are taking away the joy from us when they say that, no, you have to lead a disciplined life, you have to do this in the morning and you do this before you sleep. We feel that, no, they're taking away my freedom. But we don't realize that following what we just want to do, what we feel like doing, is the way actually we get enslaved, right? But without our knowledge, we are becoming weaker and weaker because we are not doing what we want to, but what we are driven to. Goes back to that question that you asked. Why is it sometimes we want to do something but we are not able to do it? It's because of this. So suddenly in between you wake up and say, I want to do this. You will not be able to do this because all through your life you've never been able to do what you resolve to do, but you're just doing whatever you're being propelled to do and you're thinking that that is what you always wanted to do. Right? I don't know if I made that clear, but the essence is when we constantly just keep following what we want to, we are becoming weak in a sense. We are not becoming strong or we are not becoming free. So that is why small disciplines in life that we follow every day, they go a very, very long way in strengthening our willpower. What you do today as a student, in following your study schedule, in following small disciplines at home, they may appear very insignificant, but it goes a long way in strengthening your willpower. Because these are all small efforts of swimming against this tide of tendencies, right? The first day, nobody's going to throw you into the pool and say, come on, do a backstroke, right? It's not like that. The first day, probably they'll put you in the water and they say, can you do a little bit of pedaling? Can you do a little bit of, with your feet and do this movement? So these small things actually go a long way in you learning the art of swimming against the tide. Similarly, these small disciplines that we take up in life, waking up at a certain time, eating at a certain time, eating in a certain manner, you know, sitting with the family and eating. These are all very small disciplines, but we don't realize following all these small, small disciplines actually strengthens our willpower much, much more than we can imagine, right? So simple things like you can start with, have a fixed time of study every day, 1 hour, 2 hour, or whatever it is, or I'll study 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour at night before going to sleep, or whatever it is. Choose a schedule which probably is comfortable for you and for your academic pressure and for the extracurricular activities which you have. But some form of a small discipline in your life. It's not that you should not watch TV at all. If it's difficult for you, if you can do that, it's amazing. But if you can't do that, have a certain fixed time, a limited time for watching TV, and a small time for spending with your friends, a small time to spend with your family. All of these will help you in strengthening your willpower, which will eventually goes back to the same question that you asked. I want to do something. I've made up my mind, but I'm not able to do this. You will eventually be able to do all of those small, small things that you're not able to do right now. And the more we lead a life of so-called freedom, doing what we feel like, it will slowly make you weak. This is a very important point that we as youngsters and as grown-ups, all of us have to remember. Doing just what we feel like appears like freedom, but it is actually a process of slavery, and it is actually a process that weakens us. And the simplest example you can think of is, you know, it's just like our muscles, right? If we don't use our muscles, they become soft, they become weak, and eventually they even waste away. In the case of, you know, some people who probably have a sort of paralysis or something like that, where they're not able to use their feet or they're not able to use their hand, eventually they say the muscle just just gets wasted away. That even if they get back their sensation in their leg or hand, they're not able to use their muscles again, because by then the muscles are wasted away. So what is the use of the muscle? The muscle is doing things which is against the flow of nature. You know, when you lift an object, the natural movement for an object is to go downwards, the pull of the gravity. So you are fighting against the tendency of each object. And that is what makes the muscle alive and powerful and strong and full of life, right? Similarly in our life, if we keep doing what we want to do, what we feel like doing, and keep saying that, no, today I feel like sleeping longer, no, today I don't feel like studying, I don't feel like touching my books, it appears like you're leading a very happy and free life, but actually you're becoming weaker and weaker. So lead a disciplined life. It may not be military discipline or clockwork discipline in that sense, but any small amount of disciplining that you bring to your life will help you to strengthen your willpower. Now, as I told you, what we are trying to do is replace our old tendencies with new tendencies, right? That is the process that we are trying to do. So if we understand how the tendencies are formed in the first place, we will be able to break some of these old tendencies and build new ones, right? So we need to find out how these tendencies got formed in our heads. Of course, we believe that it happens over many lifetimes, right? That's why even when you're a 15-year-old girl, you're a 14-year-old girl, or even if you're 10 years old, it's not enough time to create such strong tendencies in your mind. We know that it has come from many past births. So if we can find out how these tendencies are made up, what are they made up of, then we will be able to manipulate them, probably break tendencies which we are not very comfortable with, which we don't like, and build new tendencies which will be helpful for us. And this section which I'm going to explain may be a little complicated for you, but I would invite you to listen to it anyway. And as I said, being an SSC student, I'm sure you'll be able to relate to it to some extent. And what I'm explaining is what you have already been taught in SSC classes for sure, but probably I'm going to put it in a way which is a little different, bringing in a little few more concepts which Swami speaks about. But listen to it anyway. As I said, I'm going to give you practical points at the end of it anyway. Even if you don't understand the explanation, you can always follow that and you're sure to benefit. You know, when this question was asked to Lord Krishna by Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, He asked this very question, you know, what are these tendencies made of? And as I said, the words which we use in Sanskrit for them are samskaras or vasanas. And Krishna explains that these samskaras are made up of two things. Our likes and our dislikes. Right? And each one of us, it's not clearly, I like these things, I don't like these things. It's a complex of strong likes and dislikes and layers of likes and dislikes. I'll explain that to you in a moment. So that is what makes us unique. So as I said, even if you and your sister have grown up together in the same house, the same parents have brought you up, you will have different likes. Probably she likes a kind of music, you like a different kind of music, or you like a different kind of food. So what we are as a person, our qualities, our characteristics, are made up of these likes and dislikes. And as I said, it is not simply liking something, but there is a priority of likes and dislikes. There are layers of likes and dislikes. Let me explain that by going back to that same example of, you know, waking up early in the morning. So you might ask me, who doesn't like to sleep more, right? This is a very cozy bed and it's a cold day. Why wouldn't anybody like to sleep longer? It's very true. Almost everybody likes to sleep. But there could be someone who likes to sleep, but probably likes to score more marks in exams, and that liking is more than his liking for sleep, right? I'm sure you must be having people like that in your class. We say that, oh, they're very studious people, right? There's some people who like to study. There are some people who really enjoy waking up in the morning and studying. Of course, the number probably might be very small, but there are people like that. So it's not that those people don't like to sleep. They do like to sleep, because sleeping is probably a very, very basic liking for all of us. But they like this activity of working hard academically more than they like sleeping. Or someone might probably have a very strong disliking for, say, failing in an exam. There are many people who are, you know, they're very, very paranoid about an exam. They're all the time worried. So they have a fear of failing in the exam. And sometimes that fear is greater than their liking for sleep, right? So this like and dislike, which also becomes, probably it's not necessary for me to go into that today, it also becomes strong attachments and fears, and these are what become our tendencies. So the starting points or the building blocks for our tendencies are our likes and dislikes, and which I said, which again get transformed and metamorphosized into attachment, into fear, into strong liking and strong disliking and hatred and all of that, jealousy, and all of this comes from these two things of we like certain things, we don't like certain things. We like some things more than we like some other things. We dislike some things more than we dislike some other things, right? So what are we supposed to do? Now we have found out that likes and dislikes is what makes our tendencies. When we just go with the flow of what we like to do, there will be an immediate happiness and pleasure, right? I have a tendency to do this, then I'm not resisting that, I'm doing whatever it is. So certainly there will be immediate pleasure to be gained from that act. But it will hurt us in the long run. Right? Just like how being lazy or eating whatever we want, let's say somebody is addicted to eating. You know? At that moment, their tendency is to eat more. So they go with the tendency, they eat, they get pleasure at that moment. They enjoy eating at that moment, but eventually they face other problems like obesity and heart problems and sugar problems, and all of that comes later. So you have an immediate benefit, immediate pleasure, but you have long-term harm, right? Whereas when we do the right thing, sometimes it is painful at that moment, but the benefits are long drawn, right? Over a long period of time, we get the benefits. So these two things, something which gives us immediate pleasure, and something which may or may not give us immediate pleasure, but gives us long-term benefits. So these two things are referred to, I'm sure you would have heard these names as part of your class, and even if you have not heard, if you're continuing to do your SSC classes, you'll come to hear them. They are called Preyas and Shreyas. What is pleasurable right now is called Preyas, But what is the right thing to do and what will benefit us on the long run is called Shreyas, right? But sometimes, if we are lucky, what we like to do and what we are supposed to do is the same. If you're lucky, that happens. You know, when that happens, it's amazing, right? So you will enjoy doing it. There will be immediate pleasure. But at the same time, it will also give you benefits in the long run. So let's say that you like mathematics. Let's say you're a big fan of the subject of maths. The day before the exams, you're supposed to study maths, right? But you also like studying maths. So you enjoy the process of studying maths. At the same time, it also benefits you because that's what you're supposed to be doing then. So in life, there are times when what we like to do is the right thing to do, but most often, what we like to do is not what we're supposed to do. So there is a Shreyas and Preyas, what has to be done, and what we like to do, what is pleasurable to do. There's always these two things. So what we are trying to do in the process, the question that you asked, why am I not able to follow resolutions that I make, and what we try to do when we make resolutions for ourselves and follow it, what we are trying to do is, we are trying to bridge these two, Shreyas and Preyas, so that what I feel like doing and what I like doing becomes one and the same. That is what happens when we change our tendencies, right? Going back to that same example of somebody throwing you into a swimming pool, once you learn swimming, you also like swimming, and when you're thrown in the water, that is also the thing that you're supposed to do, because if you don't do the stroke, you're going to drown. So you like swimming, at the same time, you also are doing what you're supposed to do when you're in water. So then that act becomes a very happy and profitable act. So that is what we're trying to do in life. We are trying to restructure the tendencies in our mind so that what we like to do and what we are supposed to do becomes one and the same. So we enjoy when we are doing it also, and we also enjoy the benefits in the long run, right? So that is what we are trying to do. So these two things, Shreyas and Preyas, have to be brought together. But most often, the problem with all of us, you, me, and most of our listeners, is that these two things, Shreyas and Preyas, what we are supposed to do and what we like to do, are quite different, and we need to deal with it, right? So it is a choice that we have to constantly make between what I feel like doing and what I am supposed to be doing, right? So what are we supposed to do when the Shreyas and Preyas are different? Remember, I told you there is a preconditioning in your mind, and you tend to do that all the time. So between this, of what my preconditioning makes me do, what these tendencies makes me do, and what I eventually do, right? You want to wake up in the morning, but what happens in the morning is either you wake up or you don't wake up. So between the preconditioning or the tendency and the act itself, you will have to bring in a filter, right? That filter is nothing but constantly you ask yourself, am I supposed to do this? Is it appropriate for me to do this particular act? Or is it appropriate for me to say this to this particular person? There is an elder in front of me. Am I saying the things which are respectful? I feel like saying this thing, but is it right to say this thing to that person? So you bring in this filter, which is between what you would like to do or what you will be propelled to do by your tendency and what you eventually do. So a filter which looks at all thoughts, words and deeds and says, I like doing this, but is it the right thing to do? And if it is the right thing to do, the filter allows it, and only then that particular thought or impulse becomes an action or a word, right? And what is this filter that we need to use? That filter is what we refer to as discrimination or buddhi. So it's like a border checkpoint, literally, you know, from one country to the other, you have a border checkpoint or a check post, whatever you call that. So this checkpoint, they allow you to pass through. And what do you need to be able to enter another country? You need what we call a visa, right? They'll see if you have the right visa, and then you'll be allowed to go into the other country. So similarly, this filter of the buddhi is like that border checkpoint, and the visa that you need to have for any thought to become an action is the visa of Shreyas. So if you are an act which is the right thing to be done, then you can be done. But for most of us, what happens is, you know, this buddhi is not strong enough. It's a very weak border checkpoint. It's a porous border. So what happens if you have a porous border? You have no control over who crosses over it, right? So now the question comes, just to quickly backtrack what I was saying, you know, there are two things always, what we are propelled to do through our tendencies and what we are supposed to do. And how do we counter this? We have to bring in this filter called the buddhi. And this buddhi will decide whether what you want to do is the right thing to do or not. If it is not the right thing to do, it stops you from doing that. If it is the right thing to do, then if it has the label of Shreyas, the label of yes, this is the right thing to do, then the buddhi allows that thought to become an action, right? So this is where we were. So the question becomes that this filter of buddhi is not strong enough for most of us. It is a very, very weak friend who keeps telling us, no, this is not right, this is not wrong, but we don't listen to it. So now we have to strengthen this buddhi, right? The filter called discrimination buddhi has to be strengthened. There are two ways in which you can strengthen the buddhi. I will speak about the easier method first, because it's also a practical and immediately followable practice. So how do you strengthen this buddhi? Simple things, what you've already been taught in your SSC classes. Chanting of the Gayatri Mantra. Swami says that nothing strengthens our discrimination, power to discriminate between good and bad, right and wrong, better than the chanting of the Gayatri Mantra, right? Because in the Gayatri Mantra, the whole thing is a prayer. We say, Dhiyo Yona Prachodayat. We say that, give effulgence to my buddhi. Give strength to my buddhi. So one of the best and easy and most effective ways to strengthen this buddhi, this filter between Shreyas and prayers, is chanting the Gayatri Mantra. So this act of, you know, early in the morning or whatever time, some people chant when they have bath, some people chant after they bath in the prayer room, whatever it is, chanting of the Gayatri Mantra is a direct way by which you can strengthen this buddhi. The other thing is worshipping Ganesha, right? That is one of the ways by which you can directly make your buddhi strong. Swami would often say this, Ganesha is buddhi pradata. Ganesha is actually the deity of the buddhi. So chanting something like one of the things which we chant here in Swami's mandir here, the Ganapati Atharvashirsha, is supposed to be very, very effective to strengthen our buddhi. And that's why you would see that every school, college and university of Swami's campuses will always have a Ganesha idol. Every hostel will have a Ganesha idol. And some of those idols, many places, Swami himself is installed. So why has Swami done that? Because worshipping Ganesha strengthens our buddhi, and that, going backwards, it also strengthens our willpower. Especially worshipping Ganesha and the Gayatri Mantra has actually benefits us in many, many ways. For students especially, it's got multiple benefits. That's why Swami has, you know, kept these statues in all these places. One thing is, it strengthens your willpower. It makes your buddhi strong. It makes it clear, because sometimes we don't know clearly what is right and wrong, right? It's not just the question of following what the buddhi says, but we don't even know clearly what is right and wrong. So chanting the Gayatri Mantra makes the willpower stronger and makes the buddhi clear what is right and wrong. And Swami says it also improves your memory power. So why wouldn't you, being a student, not want to benefit from such a mantra? So definitely one of the practical tips I would give in the course of this answer is chanting of the Gayatri Mantra. The last method to strengthen your will. As I said, there are always this choice between what I would like to do, what I want to do, what I want the freedom to do, between what I am supposed to do. I'll tell you a small chinakatha which Swami says in this regard, and I'll tell you how it is applicable to this particular issue that you asked. And Swami is talking about this Christian priest who was once going on a horse carriage. So there was this horse carriage, a cartman who was driving the carriage, and this Christian priest was sitting behind and traveling in this carriage. At one particular point, they had to cross a railway crossing. There was a bridge, the railway crossing was there, and this carriage had to cross over that place. And this cartman, when he came near that railway crossing, he started whipping the horse very, very hardly, you know, for no reason. The horse was progressing as normally, it was not making any fuss, but suddenly this man starts whipping the horse when they come near the railway crossing. And Swami was saying that this Christian priest was a very compassionate man, who read the Bible about, you know, you should be compassionate to all beings. He was very disturbed by this, and he told the cartman, "What are you doing? Why are you beating up that beast for no reason?" And then the cartman gave this explanation. He said, "You see, Father, near this railway crossing on the bridge, they have a certain pattern of painting there, and I don't know exactly what it is. Swami says that there are certain white rocks or rocks painted white in color, which have been kept in a certain manner, so that people who come there will know that there is a railway crossing there." So this person was telling, the cartman was telling the priest that these particular stones actually scare the horse. The horse is scared of these stones. Whenever it sees these stones, it gets scared. And when it gets scared, it doesn't want to walk through that bridge. Sorry. It doesn't want to walk through that bridge, right? So he says, but when I start whipping the horse is more scared of my whip than it is scared of that white stone. And because it is more scared of my whip, it forgets or overcomes its fear of those white stones, and then it crosses the bridge. And Swami says that when this cartman gave this explanation, this Christian priest, you know, being a very intelligent person and being a person who is spiritually inclined, he understood the message which was in this particular analogy. And Swami said, see, similarly in our life, there are some things which we very, very fondly like to do. There are some things which we don't want to do at all. I'm sure being a student, you come across situations where you have extreme fear of doing some things, but when we grow up, you'll always have that. You will have situations of moral dilemmas where doing something might be wrong, but it will give you immediate benefit. And you have the fear that if I don't do this, I'll lose my job. If I don't do this, you know, what will happen to my family? So there are some things which you have a strong fear which makes you do the wrong thing. And there are some things where you have a strong liking. You're so attached to it, you're so drawn to it, that you end up doing something which is wrong. So Swami was saying that if you can bring in something which forms a stronger liking than the likings that you already have, which forms a stronger fear than the fear that you already have, then you can ensure that you avoid any of the wrong things which are driven by what you like or what you fear. And Swami goes on to say that the love for God and your liking to please God should be so strong when you become more and more and more devoted to Swami, when you grow in devotion to Swami, that desire to please Swami, the desire to make Swami happy will be stronger than any other desire that you have in life. When that happens, no desire will make you do what is wrong, because this desire to please Swami will overrule any other desire. Similarly, Swami says, the fear of displeasing Swami, the fear of doing something which Swami will not approve of, that fear will become so much stronger that the fear of losing out on anything, losing a job, losing a, you know, a friend, or being spoken of wrongly, or whatever it is, whatever small fears that we have, when this fear of displeasing Swami becomes so strong, all the other small fears will be overruled, and that way you will eventually be doing what you're supposed to do in every situation in life. So in other words, what you're doing, as I said, there is this buddhi which has got to play this role of a traffic policeman or a checkpoint which says that you have to go, you don't have to go. And now this buddhi, when you bring in Swami and devotion for Swami into it, is only subservient to these two criteria. I want to do what Swami is happy with me doing, and I don't want to do what will displease Swami. These are the only two masters for this buddhi. And so this buddhi will every now and then keep referring to this master and say, okay, this thought wants to become an action. Will Swami be happy with this thought? If it will not be, then it will not get the permission. If it will have the approval of Swami, then you can go. You can become a word, you can become an action, you can speak this on this particular occasion. So this buddhi will only be subservient to your devotion to God, and that is the best way, and the best way to strengthen the buddhi and make it function effectively. So in other words, just growing your devotion to Swami, just constantly saying, Swami, I want to please you. Swami, I don't want to do things which you will not be happy with. This attitude actually will give us enormous amounts of willpower, enormous amounts of ability to do what is right over doing what we are pushed to do by our tendencies, doing what we think that we like to do. So that is the answer I wanted to give. I know it's a very, very long answer, but with the, I do hope that you've found some benefit from it. But as I promised you, I will quickly summarize, not the entire answer, don't worry. I will just give you the working points or the practical points that I spoke of. So even if you want to listen to this part of the answer again, you probably can immediately pick up points which you can start doing. And what I've told you so far is the explanation of why these practical points will work in your life. So even if you don't understand the explanation, you can always just pick up the points and start following them. So the first practical tip that I gave you, anything that you wish to do, a change in routine, a change in diet, exercise routine, study schedule that you want to keep for yourself, make it and follow it at least for 3 weeks to a month. Of course, these number of days, it's nothing like it's a fixed thing, but at least for a month, 21 days to 30 days, you have to follow it. Only then it will become a part of you. Otherwise, you will only stop and then restart, then again after a few days, again start the routine, again stop. So 21 to 30 days at least. That's the first practical point I'm giving you. The second one is, try and have some disciplines in your life. You don't have to have a very, very strict discipline, a very strict routine. No, it's not necessary. You know, just simple things like every day you wake up at the same time, every day you go to bed at the same time, you have a certain hour for your studies, you have a certain hour probably for your recreations, watching TV, playing with friends, or reading your novels, or whatever it is. But a discipline in how much time you give for each one of these. All these small, small disciplines will go a very, very long way in helping you develop your willpower. The third thing is a tip which I didn't mention of in the answer, but I'm going to mention it here, I've kept it for here, is most often, you know, when you have distractions, when you're trying to follow something, the distractions which are in front of us will weaken our willpower, right? So as much as possible, if you can remove the distractions that are in front of you, you can't do away with all distractions, some distractions are beyond us, but whatever distractions are within our power, if you can remove them from your sight, that will also help you in the initial stages to develop your willpower. Simple examples I'll give you. You know, when you study, you switch off your mobile phones, you switch off your gadgets. For instance, internet is a very, very good source of learning material, but it is also a den of distractions. You will agree with me. So when you want to concentrate, don't use the internet even for the, even though it is useful for your study. Download whatever material you want to. But during your study time, that 1 hour or 2 hour which you've assigned for your study time, try to use these materials offline. Don't try not to do your internet research at this time because internet is a source of distraction. So in this manner, whatever you can remove the distractions completely from in front of you. It'll be that much easier for you to stick to your willpower and to strengthen it. A simple example I can think of is, you know, when we were in Swami's hostel, we all had to wake up early, and most of us were not used to waking up so early in our homes. So what we would do is, you know, as soon as we wake up, we would quickly fold our beds and put them inside. You know, some of us would leave the beds open, some of us would quickly roll it, fold the bed sheets and everything and put it into the cupboard. Because when we go for Suprabhatam and come back, an open bed is always a temptation, right? An open bed is always a distraction. You know that you don't want to sleep again, but an open bed, you would say, oh, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, let me just stretch my legs, and that's where the whole problem comes. So what we would do is remove that distraction completely from us, roll the bed and keep it aside. So that there are many, many small things. I'm not able to tell that because I don't know your schedule. You will be able to point out the ways by which you can completely remove the distractions, especially when you want to study. That 1 hour is more than enough if you're able to study in this manner. Those physical distractions that you can remove from you, if you do it, then it will give you an opportunity to develop your willpower. You know, we always see this. You know, you see a tennis player who's playing in the Wimbledon, or you see the cricketers who are playing in a big tournament. There are tens of thousands of people around them. How are they able to concentrate in the game? That is because they develop their concentration in solitude, they develop their concentration, removing all other distractions. So once you develop your concentration and willpower, it doesn't matter whether you're in a crowd or you're alone, you will always be able to stick to it. So, as much as possible, remove the distractions from you when you are in the process of strengthening your willpower. The fourth one, I explained, you know, how all our tendencies are made up of likes and dislikes, and we blindly tend to follow all our likes, right? That is why, wherever it is possible, a little bit of ceiling on desires, which Swami very often speaks about, which I'm sure you would have been taught about in your classes too, is very important. You know, even if you can afford it, Swami would say, sometimes you don't go for it. That is what is ceiling on desires. In your case, let me explain it in this manner. You know, let's say it's a Sunday and you're completely free, you don't have any study work to do. So you can afford to sleep till late, but there's nothing wrong. I mean, you can probably sleep till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, nobody's going to stop you. But you stop yourself. You say that, no, I don't want to sleep so much. That is also a form of ceiling on desires. It's not necessarily only in relation to money. So in many ways like that, you could probably do something for a long period of time. You have the luxury, but you cut yourself. In this manner, you are not giving, you know, complete control for your likes and dislikes to rule what you do. You say that, no, this is the moderation I want. So that process of ceiling on desires always helps us in developing our willpower. Not only as students, even as you grow up, you'll find that practicing ceiling on desires gives you a lot of control over yourself, which is very, very important for all of us. Then I spoke about discrimination being the filter for all our actions and words. So constantly ask before saying or doing anything, you know, I want to say this, but is it the right thing to say? I want to do this, but is this the right thing to do? That filtering process must happen all the time. Point number six, to be able to do this filtering, I said that buddhi has to be strong, it has to be assertive, and it has to be clear. It should know what is right and wrong. And a way of strengthening the buddhi is by chanting the Gayatri Mantra. It's a very, very useful, and it's a tip which will show you immediate benefits. You don't have to take my word for it. You try it, you'll know that chanting the Gayatri Mantra strengthens your willpower. And worshipping Ganesha, chanting especially the Ganapati Atharvashirsha, Swami would say that it strengthens your buddhi enormously. So that is a practical tip that you can follow. And finally, you need a very strong reason to avoid what you tend to do, what you would eventually like to do. And that is this feeling that Swami likes this, Swami does not like this, Swami approves of this, Swami does not approve of this. So the more you grow in devotion to God, the more you have this feeling that you give priority to God, right? Because I told you it's all the tendencies are about likes and dislikes, and are about layers of likes and dislikes which are prioritized. So the moment you give priority to God in your life, you will find that this buddhi becomes so much stronger, the willpower becomes so much stronger, and you're able to do what is right all the time. You can make a resolution, you can make a decision, and you will see that effortlessly you will be able to follow it, because you become more and more in control of your own life. So, Vidya, thank you for that question. I know it seemed like a very simple question, but it's a very, very profound question. The entire essence of the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita revolves around this question that you asked. So that's how profound a question that you asked, though 14-year-old. Thank you for asking that question. And I'm sorry if my answer was very complex, but I'm sure it will benefit you in some way, even if you follow those few tips that I've given. If you have any clarification on what I've said, if you want me to explain any of that, you can always write to me, and I'll be happy to do that for you. Well, that, dear listeners, brings us to the end, definitely, of this week's afternoon's answering booth, because I've really short my time. We started a bit late too, but nevertheless, that question warranted a complete, comprehensive answer. If any of you have anything to ask on the basis of what I've answered, or you have your questions of your own, feel free to write to me at prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. This is my personal mail ID. The mails that you send to this will be read only by me. It's completely confidential. So if you wish to be anonymous, do let me know. I will not mention your name on the show when I'm answering your question. I'm going to leave you with a song, a very interesting song. And it's a memory from my past. You know, in the first year that I joined Swami's college, it was in 1999, and I recall Swami was in Vrindavan at that time for the first 2 weeks of June. And we went up to Swami and said, Swami, please come to the university, right? Swami, we would go to Darshan, we would go to Trai Vrindavan. So we had invited Swami to the institute building. Swami, we said, Swami, please come to the institute building because we are a new batch of students. We have all joined. And Swami said, yes, yes, definitely I'll come. And I still recall Swami said, I'll come on the 17th of June. That's exactly what Swami said. On the 17th of June, I'll come to the institute, Swami said. But then we started practicing songs to welcome Swami. And we found that on 16th of June, Swami left Vrindavan back to Puttaparthi. And we were wondering, Swami, you said you're going to come to the institute on the 17th of June and you went away on the 16th, one day before. And then promptly we get a news after a couple of days that exactly on the 17th of June, Swami went to the institute, but not in Vrindavan, but in Prashanti Nilayam. So we always judge Swami's words based on our little understanding, but Swami never, never says anything which is of no value or no meaning. There is always a meaning subtler than we can understand. That's the beauty of Swami. So the song which I'm going to play for you is the song that we learned to sing and welcome Swami on the 17th of June, which never happened. But the song is such a beautiful song, and I love the song. So I'm sure you will all love the song. This is a song. This song was rendered by the Balvika student. That's the version I'm going to play for you. It's a beautiful song. I'll meet you at 12:30 again with Arvind for the afternoon satsang. But please do join me again 11 a.m. next week for the Radio Sai Answering Booth.
Listen to the strokes of our hearts, it's inside we love you.